Hey there, it's Michael Costa from The Daily Show on Comedy Central. Ever wonder what happens behind the scenes or want to catch some extended interviews? Well, now you can. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition podcast for full episodes, extended content, and a whole lot more. The Daily Show, Ears Edition is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Now you can feel like you're in the audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater with official Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise at ParamountShop.com. Shop t-shirts, mugs, accessories, and more. And Late Show Poncho listeners can take 20% off with code TLS20. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show products with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com. It's the Late Show Poncho with Stephen Colbert.
Yes, sir, over in the corner, yeah.
What's your favorite bourbon?
What's my favorite bourbon? It's called Weller 12. Yeah. Really? You guys know the Weller 12? You guys don't mind dropping some coin on some bourbon. I like Weller 12. I mean, listen, if I'm making like an old-fashioned, maybe I just, you know, I'm good with some Maker's Mark. You know, I am occasionally, because people know that I like bourbon, occasionally I'll get a nice bottle of bourbon and I never say no. But I was once given a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle. I don't know if you've had it, but it was Pappy Van Winkle 20, which I didn't open. It was probably 25 or almost 30 by the time it was opened. And it was opened by the only person who should have opened it. It was my father-in-law, who was in town staying with us, and he couldn't find any bourbon. He had no idea what Pappy Van Winkle was, so he went like that, opened up for himself a drink. And my brother Ed, who happened to be in town exactly the same time, walked in and he just braced me. He said, I want you to come to the bar and I want you to brace yourself before you get there. And I went, who opened my Pappy Van Winkle? And he goes, I don't know. I've never seen an open bottle before. I saw your hand first, young lady, right there on the aisle. Yeah. What would be, if I was a professional baseball player, what would my walk-up song be? It would be Funeral March for a Marionette. Do you guys know it? Do you know it? Yeah. You might remember it as this. That's it. It's the Alfred Hitchcock theme. Yeah, Funeral March for a Marionette. What? Because I would definitely strike out. Yes, sir, right there.
How has your wife, Abby, handled all the fame and fortune of the last year?
How has she handled it? She didn't believe it. I was saying to her, like, oh, people really like when you're on the show. She's like, oh, no, that's just very nice. No. And I said, no, seriously, it's a better show when you're there, and people... You should check online. People actually like you. She's like, oh, pshaw. And then when she came out for the first show back and everybody leapt to their feet, she was so moved. I'm like, see, I told you, people like you. And it's been great for us. Now we're in contract negotiations. It's very ugly. Anybody else? Yes, right there. Yes, sir.
I really enjoyed your interview with Paul. Another Beatle-related question. Is there anything you two shared that you didn't share with us?
Is there anything that Paul McCartney and I shared with each other that I didn't share with you? That was just too good for television? I will tell you something that Paul shared with me that he didn't share on TV is that, here, I gotta pull out something to go, okay. So, I'm at the White House and... the Obama's 55th birthday party. And I'm there in the library with Tom Hanks. And while I'm down in the library, a lot of men are coming through the library because the men's room is off the library on the basement floor of the White House. And so I'm there talking with Hanks, and up walks Paul McCartney. And Paul McCartney says, it's a nice party. I said, it is. It's a really great party. He said, what a great little room to be in here. He goes, it is a nice place. And I said, that's George Washington's sword, because on the wall, hang on, library, they have George Washington's, you know, commander's sword, like that. And he looks at it and he goes, you know, I'm a knight. I said, I know, I heard. He goes, you know, you kneel down, you know, you kneel, come on, arise, Sir Paul. And I said, yeah, I figure that's how it works. And I said, you know, the sword they used for me was a sword of Edward the Confessor. I said, it's 11th century, right? And he goes, yeah. And he looks up and he goes, so that's a nice sword. Far and away, you deserve it. What was the biggest challenge? Doing it again tomorrow. Because we do a lot of them. We do a lot of them. Let's see, how many shows have we done so far?
Today's 1,300.
Today's 1,300. Wow. Today's 1,300? Man.
Wow.
Wow.
That is a lot of jokes, my friend. That's a lot of jokes. And it's also 1,300 hours of show. On the old show, we did almost 10 years. This has been what now? 7 years? This week is finishing 7 years. On the last show, we did 9.5 years, and we did 1,447 shows, and that only worked out to about, you know, 723 hours. We've done 1,300 hours of shows here, so it's a lot more work than the old gig used to be. But I get to share the stage, which is lovely. I get with these people like this. I get to do things. That whole thing about a lot of jokes is that when Evie, my darling wife, when she says like, oh, do you think we should buy X, Y, or Z? I'll look at the price and I go, that's a lot of jokes. That's a whole lot. That's a whole lot. I don't know. I'm not sure if I can tell that many. I'm not sure if I can tell that many jokes. That's a lot of jokes. And we have on the mantelpiece of our house, we have written in Latin, Haec domus quam eoci edificaverunt est. Anybody speak Latin? This is the house that jokes built. Yes, ma'am, right over there.
What are my plans for Halloween?
Unfortunately, I know my wife isn't going to be in town. So I'm going to turn off the lights. And I'm going to build a little fire in the back, and Benny and I are going to watch some spooky movie and eat all the candy we're not giving the children. Yes, ma'am, right there.
What's your favorite fairy tale and why?
My favorite fairy tale... I kind of like Iron Hans. Do you know that one? It's a Grimm's fairy tale. It's not that well known. It's about a wild man in the forest. And a boy goes out into the forest, and he has to meet this wild man and make friends with the wild man, essentially, before he can get the princess and become the king himself. Do you know that story? It's a little known. But I had a professor at Northwestern University when I was a student there, and my senior year, I was taking a class called Archetypal and Psychological Approaches to Literature, taught by this Jungian analyst, professor of interpretation of literature at Northwestern School of Speech, called Leland Roloff. And so halfway down the steps of this old building called Fisk at Northwestern University, there was big Palladian windows, and there was a windowsill that was really deep and about shoulder height as you went down the stair, the switchback staircase. And I had two classes in the same building an hour apart, and so I just would go up there and read in the hour between classes. And I'm up there, and Lee Roloff walks down and sees me in the big crowd of people. He stops, and he looks at me, and he goes, how perfect. You're neither down there, nor are you up there. You need your Iron Hans. And he walked away. And I read that story, and it resonated with me. And so that's my favorite fairy tale. Do you have a favorite fairy tale? Not that easy of a question, is it? I'm sorry, young lady. What was your answer? Jack and the Beanstalk is good. There aren't a lot of English fairy tales. Most fairy tales are German or Norse or French or something like that in the Western canon. The English basically have only the Jack stories. And then they're basically the Jack and the Beanstalk, Jack and the Golden Goose, and stuff like that. There are very, very few fairy tales that survive. And the ones we do have are really French fairy tales. And that's why Tolkien wrote The Lord of the Rings, is because he was trying to create a backstory for those little snippets of fairy tales that still survive for the English that involve elves, to try to figure out, well, who were these elves and what do the English mean by elf? And so I should stop now. Okay. yes, young lady right there, yes.
We did a series a little while back called Stephen Hasn't Seen
So I did this thing. We did this digital series, which won a Webby. Series called Stephen Has a Story, where literally they would grab me as I was coming down to the show, and I would tell a story coming down in the elevator. What's the one I didn't tell? It wasn't a prank. The prank was one of my guy I was writing partner with for 15 years, still a producer here named Paul Dinello, and he was Mr. Jelinek in Strangers with Candy. One day he stabbed me in the stomach with what really looked like a black steel knife, but it was rubber. And then he found out in that moment that my last words would have been, "Oh." Because it was my best friend, and he stabbed me in the stomach, and my last words were, "Oh." And he goes, "It was really sad to see how you would react if I murdered you. You wouldn't be mad at all. You'd just be kind of sad, disappointed in me." So the get a dog was, it was shortly thereafter, my friend at the time had never had his heart broken. And the girl I was dating at the time took my heart out, stomped it on the ground, invited people to come over and say, "You want to see how good I'm stopping his heart?" and stomping some more for other people's entertainment. I was destroyed. And so we went out to breakfast one morning to Nookie's on Wells Street in Chicago, and I get my two eggs over easy, wheat toast, hash brown, buttered, juice, coffee. And he said, "How are you?" And I said, "Well, I would tell you how I am, but I'm afraid I would start crying." And he said, "I'd rather remain ignorant than watch you weep." And I said, "Yeah, I get that. And I said, "I guess I'm just lonely." And you said,
"Get a dog."
get a dog. Anybody else? Anybody up here? Yes, sir, right there. Yeah.
What's your favorite condiment or sauce?
What's my favorite condiment or sauce? Okay, interesting distinction in your mind between condiment and sauce. Condiment goes on a meat of some kind, and then a sauce, the meat could be tossed in it or something like that, or just could be on pasta or something, one assumes. I don't know why I'm explicating your question for you. Let's see, condiment or sauce. I mean, I like just like a real, like, clean, simple marinara for a sauce. And for a condiment, you're not going to know what I'm talking about. Does anybody know what I'm talking about when I say artichoke relish? Anybody know artichoke relish? Talk to me. Prove to me you know what artichoke relish is. What is it?
It's similar to me than what relish is, but not sweet at all.
No, it's like a mustardy. It's used from Jerusalem artichokes, which aren't really artichokes, sometimes called sunchokes. That's my favorite condiment. You can put it on anything. It's kind of mustardy. It's like a relish, but it's also, you can use it like a mustard. It's amazing. Artichoke relish, and it has to be Mrs. Sassard's artichoke. You know, it has to be Mrs. Sassard's artichoke relish, who's been making it, I don't know, since the late 1800s, I think. She does good work. I saw you first, sir.
Stephen, how are you doing today?
That's a question. I'm good. How about you?
Mm-hmm. My question for you, Stephen, what advice can you offer me for somebody who's just lost their father? I know you lost your father, and now there's a sense of it, but I'm looking for help anyway.
Well, I would say this. I'm sorry for the loss of your father. There's nothing like the loss of a parent, and there's nothing I can say that can approach your grief. And unfortunately, grief is something that is so basic to the human experience. It's like grief is like a person who comes and sit with you, and they won't go away if you ask them to. And you can't fix it, unfortunately. You can only experience it. And try not to think of it as an endurance. Try to think of it as an education to the beauty of the rest of your life and the joy that the father brought to you. And the grief that you feel right now is actually a path toward wisdom, to love the life that you have and everyone around you. And I hope it transforms from grief into love, and ultimately to peace. Good luck. That's the show, everybody. Good night. But there's no getting around it. That's part of the way, part of the reasons why the great joy of your life is a great balance to all the grief of your life. And that's why I do this show, is because of all the grief I've had in my life. And it taught me that there is no choice but to be grateful and to engage. So, yes, sir, right there. Yes?
He watched your show.
Your dad? He sounds like a wonderful person.
He watched your show every single night, even when he was the sickest. And he appreciated everything you did. And just hearing his laugh made my day, my mom's day.
Well, I'm so glad. You know, I'll tell you a story about, people often ask me why I'm a comedian, and I'm sorry about the loss of your father. One of the things they ask me why I became a comedian, I go, oh, who knows why somebody becomes a comedian? They're often fishing around for, like, is the death of your father and your brothers when you're younger one of the reasons why you became a comedian? And I say, I guess so, but a lot of people lose people. There's a lot of tragedy, a lot of suffering in life, and not everybody becomes a comedian. But I do remember coming back from the graveside of burying my father and my brothers, and my sister Mary and my sister Margaret were in the back seat of one of those old limos where the seats flip forward and you're facing each other in the back of it. And my sister Mary said something. This is literally just moments after leaving the graveside. My sister Mary said something to my sister Margot about the family, probably, that made my sister Margot laugh so hard she fell on the floor of the limo. In that moment. And I remember thinking, I want to do that.
Yeah.
So if I did that for your dad, well, then my work is done here. Thank you very much.
This has been The Late Show Pacho with Stephen Colbert. The Late Show will be back from fall break on October 24th with all new episodes. If you're enjoying The Late Show Pacho, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. For more exclusive Late Show content, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube.
CBS Sunday, after The Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after The Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on Wondery Plus.